Hello, I'm Llewellyn King, the host of White House Chronicle, which is coming right up. This edition is brought to you by Public Utilities Fortnightly and a special conference on the state of the utility industry, which that magazine is holding in Scottsdale, Arizona on the 17th and 18th of November. Check it out on their website. Before we go to the program, a few thoughts of my own. Did you know that this is National Shelter Dog Month? I don't know who established it as National Shelter Dog Month, but it's a wonderful time to get a pug, a pup, any kind of dog, a lovely shelter special of unknown parentage and unending love. Everybody needs a bit more love than they get. Just get a dog. You'll get all the love you want. You'll also get vet bills and some chewed up things, and you may lose a friend or two, but the love is unstoppable. Fabulous. There are too many dogs. Too many people are influenced by movies, by different things where dogs appear, and they go out and they buy all they can of that breed, and they find they're unsuitable, and they end up in shelters. You can get purebreds, you can get my favorite, the mutts, a bit of everything, and you will get a bargain of heart, the like of which you cannot get anywhere else. We all could use a bit more love. The shelter dogs can use some, and you can. If it's possible, get one this month. You will not regret it, I'm sure. We have a special program today. We always have a special program. But today we're going to be looking at the political change of topography in America. And we have a guest who is very gifted at talking about these things. Linda Gasparella of this program will introduce our guest.
I'd love to. Our guest is a frequent guest on White House Chronicle. He is Edward Acorn, known as Ed Acorn. He is the editorial page editor
of... That's an interesting contraction.
...of the Providence Journal, one of our favorite papers. And so with that, Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Linda.
Has there been a seismic shift in American politics? One thing that it seemed to me, looking at the debate, which has now passed into history almost, it only takes in... with the speed of modern communications, 2 days for something to pass into history or faux history. We had the left wing on display, genuine left-leaning, left-thinking politicians, very different from what we saw in the Republican debates and very different from what we can expect from the Republicans. We heard something that you didn't hear for 100 years, which was a kindly attitude to socialism. It used to be if you wanted to denigrate your opponent, you accused him or her of socialism. What's happening?
You're right. I think we're more accepting of socialism, which may not be a great thing for the country, in my opinion. But we've segmented into very different political camps, and it's... I'm finding this as an editor of commentary pages. I try to have both sides, and they just scream rather than try to get anything out of the other side is saying. And it's we're very segmented now. And you know, if you look back, even in our recent history, it's long ago now, I suppose, but Nixon versus Kennedy. You look at these two people; they're different parties. They're yelling. Disagreeing with each other, but they have central core beliefs that are very similar. And I think it's kind of a new and not a wonderful thing for America that we're sort of shooting off into different directions, and the things that bring us together aren't necessarily discussed.
But Ralph Nader used to say that there was no choice for the American voter. That's why he said he ran. I don't believe that, and he and I have had a dispute about this, but now you clearly have a choice. Right and left are clearly absolutely defined as being very different.
Yeah.
Isn't that a good thing? Isn't it a good thing that you actually know that you're not voting for a wolf in sheep's clothing, you're voting for a sheep or a wolf?
Well, right. There are still people who say it's the, you know, the corporate interests control everything, and they eventually just come together. I think the American system tends to force people closer together. Just the way our founders created it, it was it's just amazing. The balance of power in government and the way the public interacts with these politicians. So I think they're forced into an arena where they sort of have to make deals, but even so, it's breaking down. It's getting harder and harder to reach consensus and move the country forward. And I think that a lot of the concern out there, a lot of the interest in these weird candidates is a reflection of the idea that people don't feel Washington's listening.
I can't let that go. You have to tell me the names of two weird candidates.
Well, I think Bernie Sanders is out there, and I think Trump's out there. I think they both don't represent what is
and yet,
the heart
in a way,
of
they're very different from the huckstering of Trump to the sort of tent revival meeting approach that Bernie Sanders has.
Yes.
He talks either like a preacher, or if you prefer the analogy, like an old-fashioned trade unionist.
Right.
Apparently we don't have any of those sorts of trade unionists anymore.
Right.
When I was watching the debate, I thought, my God, this is back to the 30s. This is an old-fashioned kind of preaching politics.
Right.
Passionate, absolute.
Well, I think,
Linda,
you know,
what did you think of everything?
Well, just back to the fact that we seem to have this phenomenon in the parties where the Democrats are going more left, the Republicans seem to be going more right. Both parties are really looking for an identity. I think both parties thought the mushy middle wasn't really where they wanted to be. And I think voters were sort of telling them that they wanted more sharply defined politics. Whether or not we actually end up there, I'm not really sure. I mean, is Mrs. Clinton that far left if she ends up the president? Or is, you know, Jeb Bush, let's just take those two for example, that far right if we look at them in the parties? No. But at the same point, the spirit, the enthusiasm seems to be in something new for a lot of voters, which is more extreme left or right positions, you know, by both. This is where the excitement is.
Yeah.
And I think just generating enthusiasm among voters has really got to come from the sides, because voters would tend not to bother if it's just like the same old mushy middle. So it's a phenomenon that I really see working this time around, where you've really got to go more left or more right in order to get the voters who have said, well, you know, I'm not really sure I want compromisers and people in the middle. And yet that's where we govern. From the middle.
This is an Anglo debate, though. This is a white values debate. I thought in this press conference and the debate that really there was short shrift given to minorities.
Oh, absolutely.
They
no question.
Didn't get a big, passionate defense.
Absolutely
Their
not.
Interests were not. Immigration was dealt with, comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah.
Nobody saying how they were going to do that, what it was. Likewise, foreign policy was appallingly treated, especially by Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary of State. You know, little arguments about no-fly zones do not represent a foreign policy for the next 6 years.
Yes.
They do
yeah.
not represent to our allies and our enemies where we're going to be and what we're prepared to do. There was no mention of South China Sea. There was a very cursory mention of the trade deals.
Well, I think Jim Webb tried to bring up the fact that,
poor
that
Jim
China
Webb, he
was,
just didn't get footing,
that
did
China
he?
Needed to be spoken about with foreign policy, but unfortunately he himself did not feel that he got enough time to say anything.
But Jim Webb is a man who you always expect to be interesting, and he isn't. He's got a fabulous resume. He's a novelist. He's got a major Hollywood movie to his credit.
He has an interesting, very interesting background.
And he's been
basically
in the government
Appalachian.
And a soldier. And yet he doesn't come across as interesting.
You keep thinking there's going to be somebody else.
Yeah, you keep thinking
people,
you want to be on the train with him, talking to him. But maybe he's not the kind of, he's a man of action, not of words. He doesn't seem to be able to synthesize, obviously, deeply held feelings. Yeah. There were little clues that he was different from the rest.
Yeah.
His defense of coal, I'd like to have heard more about that, defense of nuclear
from
power.
From Appalachia and nuclear power was, I thought, quite marked and quite...
Nobody got into it.
Nope.
It wasn't an issue. Everybody was going on and on and on about clean, renewable energy, clean energy. And nobody, in my opinion, maybe you heard this, Ed, said how all this was going to be paid for except by going after the rich.
Yeah, the politicians don't want to discuss how it will be paid for.
But I wanted to hear somebody giving me a vision, somebody saying, I believe I can lead the country into growth, which will give us the revenues to pay for the social programs we need, which I think we do need these social programs.
Yeah.
But I think we need to have a path of growth to pay for them. Soaking the rich won't do it. This has been tried in Europe, and the rich just moved to another country pretty fast.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Well, remember, Mrs. Clinton did say, we are not Denmark. You know, she believes that the capitalist system that we have is actually a good one.
She came at it backwards.
A little backwards
She was fighting off the Denmark approach of Bernie Sanders.
So, and also the Glass-Steagall Act.
From O'Malley, which was Back to the Future. There was no real idea what you do about curbing misdeeds on Wall Street, so we don't get into another 2007 debacle. There was no information about how you run a foreign policy, what the real goals are, where are we going to tolerate dictators, when are we not going to, is the idea of pushing democracy everywhere dead. It's been catastrophic in the Middle East, an absolute disaster. None of that was addressed. But on the other hand, very different, I thought, from the other side's debate. These people all seem to like each other.
Yeah.
They all seem to want to go on vacation together and chat about things.
And I thought that was very good for Hillary Clinton, that she has been weakened by character questions, and they all laid off her, and it was quite an interesting night for her. In fact, Bernie Sanders is mad at the press for looking at this, her use of private emails, which is designed to make sure she's not accountable, and also to keep people from prying too closely.
But remember also, there's a lot more to come, Llewellyn. We've got five more Democratic debates.
Also, I think that the immediate aftermath of this debate was to think that somehow Hillary was off the hook. She's not off the hook.
Not by any means.
No, but it's interesting that they're not going after her. They've sort of let, and that leads her all the way to the nomination. If they act like
that's true, and the Republicans will go after her because she has a lot of baggage. We're going to take a little moment for station identification, primarily for our listeners on Sirius XM Radio, channel 124, the POTUS channel. This program is heard there four times every weekend. You are listening to White House Chronicle with myself, Llewellyn King, Linda Gasparello of this program, and our special guest, Edward Acorn, editorial pages editor of the Providence Journal, and I might say an author in his own right. This program can be heard on 200 American, or seen on 200 American television stations, and around the world on the English language service of the Voice of America. Ed, let's talk about her. She has not been cleansed by a single debate. The issues didn't come up, but they remain. The Republicans looking at her are going to be careful when they have to debate her, I would think, because she's obviously very good on her feet.
She's had
a lot of experience. She's a lawyer. She's fast. And she likes it. This is a very important thing in these debates. if the players like it, if they go in terrified with their heads stuffed full of what their advisors tell them to say. It's like people who've had media training, when they come and sit where you're sitting, you can tell immediately because you can see the wheels going around. What was I supposed to do now?
Instead, I just stumbled blindly along.
She still has everything from the Rose Law Firm to a rather unspectacular 4 years as Secretary of State, and these amazing flip-flops, the Asian Trade Treaty,
TPP, yeah.
TPP, which she largely negotiated. Suddenly, she's repudiating. This didn't look good. This is leaves you very vulnerable in a real debate, where people are going for you.
Yes, I thought she was very fortunate in a number of areas because of that. And you're right, she called that the gold standard of treaties, and then she was all of a sudden not in favor.
Well, there's a, you know, she was, I must admit, she did have very quick answers for responses to why she did what she did with the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership.
Linda, you give me a quick answer. What do you think of this treaty, TPP?
I think there's some good and some bad in it. I mean, like any treaty, there's some good and some bad.
Do you think we should ratify it?
I think if we don't ratify it, it sends a message to China that we don't have the friends that we think we have in the Far East, and I don't think there's going to be another chance to get one of these things going in a long
time. I think that was an excellent answer because it accords with my beliefs.
Oh, does it? Oh, maybe, can I have some time to change my mind?
What do you think?
Same thing. I think we can't turn our back on a changing world trade.
We've got one trade, but also we've got to say to Asia, we're with you. At a time when China is expanding into the South China Sea, literally trying to steal an ocean.
Yes.
Never done in history. Continents have been stolen by imperialists, etc. This is an imperial grab of an ocean.
Right.
Extraordinary.
And in trade, China has signed its own deals with neighbors. China has built roads. China has really invested in trade. And I think that they've also invested in banking infrastructure. We now have a competitor banking system that China is developing and signing up more members, including an ally of ours, Australia. So this is not a time for us to back away from area. And it was
America's,
the one point that Jim Webb made that I think really didn't get through because there wasn't enough focus on the discussion.
And America has always been the advocate of open seas trade. The right of everybody to trade on these seas, and I think that's something that's really important.
On this whole matter of treaties, there's a backstory about the South China Sea, and that is in our disinclination to ratify treaties, we never ratified the law of the sea. We signed it, but it was never passed by Congress.
That's
and
right.
And we, as a consequence, have less moral authority in that area than we should have. And we tend to do it all the time. The Congress tends to say, oh, we're surrendering American sovereignty. Well, in fact, we're surrendering American strategic positions. We're not surrendering American sovereignty, but strategic positions where we take that very nationalistic view of everybody is out to cheat us. And treaties work on the whole. The post-Soviet Union treaties with the Russians have worked in terms of reducing the stocks of plutonium, anti-ballistic missiles. And you go back through history, good treaties have worked very well, like the Congress of Vienna. But bad ones, like the Treaty of Versailles, have brought their own problems.
And once again, it gets
They do change things. They are effective.
But it gets you to the question of, you know, when we have a Congress that is in disarray, it's very, very hard to get these important international things signed. And it has been, we have so much that's on our plate in the next year. And the Congress it doesn't give me any hope that there's some kind of leadership, enlightened leadership, is going to come out of this. I just see more tribalism, more, toe your side of the party line by both Democrats and Republicans, whether it's more conservative or more liberal on either side.
It's more like a...
As Llewellyn says, we are degenerating into the very system that we fought a revolutionary war against. This is more a parliamentary system.
Yeah. Well, I think the Republicans are in disarray because they haven't been able to advance a coherent message. They've had poor leaders. I think these really hardcore conservatives, they're elected by their constituents. They're supposed to change Washington, and nothing's happening from the perspective of their constituents, and they're going to push back, and I think that's what's happening in Washington. I don't know if they can find someone who can articulate a message. The messaging of that party is just incredibly poor.
Well, you know, you look at something like the debt ceiling, you know, which is going to be coming up, and, you know, it was a near catastrophe the last time it came around, with 9 Republicans voting for and pushing it over the top, and we were able to raise the debt ceiling and maintain our status, our good financial status in the world. But now you've got those 9 members have left Congress. You know, you've got the 2 houses that are held by Republicans, and I don't know what's going to happen. I think the banking industry is wondering, if this happens, if we do not allow the ceiling to be raised, we're going to be in big trouble again.
Well,
and it's more likely that it won't happen because there's no leadership, no Republican leadership right now in Congress.
That's an immediate problem. A long-term problem is what is the posture of the United States in the Middle East. It's got to be more sophisticated than we love Israel. It's got to have some other dynamic. You have advocated, I believe, Linda, a better relationship with Iran. In the debate, we didn't hear that. We heard people beating on Iran or often in the course of a general remark, parenthetically saying something.
Well, in the debate, we
unpleasant
heard,
about
we heard
Iran.
Mrs. Clinton talking about the need for no-fly zones as leverage against the Russians. You know, this is not a way to deal with that. You know, we need strategic thinking.
Well, if we keep up the bombing, there'll be no population as they flee the bombing. Our bombing.
Well,
Putin's
it's now spilling.
Bombing is a truly terrible thing. It's not selective. It's not surgical. It has tremendous collateral damage, even if you don't want it, and it leaves the civilian population angered at you for many generations.
Well, we're engulfing so many more countries. Now, we've, of course, you know, Turkey has been thrown into this in a much bigger way. It has some of the things that have gone on with, you know, the greater Middle East have once again roused frustrations among the Palestinians, causing more destabilization. And it's something that requires, as everybody knew in diplomacy, whether it's in the State Department or whether it's on the defense side, very coordinated work, slowly but surely, step by step, inch by inch.
Take your victories
when you can take them.
What are you feeling about Middle East policy?
I feel like we've created a power vacuum there. I think the Obama administration has pulled back too much myself. I think we pulled up troops out of Iraq too fast.
Could we have left them there?
Well, we could
without a status of forces agreement.
We would have to work out such an agreement, and we would have to use our strength.
We tried to.
Well, I think we could have tried harder. And I think...
Just for our viewers and listeners, status of forces means that American forces are subject to American justice, not to Sharia law.
Right.
Which we would not have tolerated
That's right.
in this country.
Nor should we. So
absolutely, neither should we. Yes,
and I feel that when you do that, when you create a vacuum, bad actors will fill it, and I think that's happened with ISIS, and I think it's happening with Russia. I think Russia has perceived an opportunity to step into the Middle East, and their goal is to weaken America, support these interests in the Middle East that are not our friends, and. I believe that's what's happening now.
Well, I think that maybe the Russians are not so totally opposed to us. They don't want to lose their base. They don't want to lose face because they have supported Assad from the beginning.
Right.
And they have been very angry that we wouldn't talk to Assad and negotiate his departure, which was possible at one point, and we wouldn't do it. Our own stubbornness, they see as our weakness. Now there are no big options. I mean, talking about no-fly zones is not a policy.
Exactly.
No.
That's not a policy.
It's truly frightening. What would you do with Iran? Would you try to do a deal with Iran to get stability? Iran is not, while we're at odds with Iran on not the treaty, but other issues, and maybe the treaty, we're not going to get stability. We've been at odds with Iran since the fall of the Shah.
Well, again, we've just created something that might have been inevitable. Iran's influence was expanding into
We took out their enemy. Their enemy was Saddam Hussein, and we took him
we
out.
We did take him out.
We did
right.
them a great favor right. in that sense.
Right. We enabled the Shia Crescent to actually happen. And the Shia Crescent was
Explain
definitely
the
going
Shia
to oppose. Well, it was the arc of Shia Muslims, and it stretches really with a huge population in Iran of 80 million. All the way over to Syria, somewhat in the Gulf. It's a very, very strong, very cohesive sect of the religion. And it was definitely going to be opposed by Saudi Arabia and by
the Sunni countries.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we now have actually, through the fact that we haven't been able to secure peace there. We actually disrupted, a lot of, the states that were there with our insistence on we needed to take Saddam Hussein out. We now have the actual two crescents that are up against each other, and it's a religious war. I mean, what do we do in a religious war?
It's a very complex religious war. Yeah. Your paper endorses candidates close to election, not now. You will do this, presumably, will you do this within the Democratic Party and then with the Republican, or do you wait to the general election?
It differs on who's the publisher, but I think we'll probably endorse in both parties for president when the time comes.
And how far out do you do that?
I believe that's around the time of our, actually probably around the time of our state's primary, we would get involved in that.
Well, thank you very much, Linda Gasparello and Edward Acorn. That is our show for today. Please remember the puppies at the shelter. They want you, and you'll love them just as much as they will love you. We could all use a little more love. Cheers. Thank you.